For Sunday, a chance of rain. Monday, Memorial Day, rain considered likely with a chance of some thunderstorms. Remaining mild, highs both days around 70. Right now, sunny skies, a temperature reading of 46. I'm David Cole, WGTD News. The Morning Show with Greg Berg coming up.
There's a book fair coming up this Saturday at the Rody Center for the Arts in downtown Kenosha. And one of the local writers who is going to be participating in that event is my morning show guest today. And she has an exceptionally interesting story. Her name is Lisa Abbott, and she is a psychologist and therapist and psychology instructor and an advocate for those who struggle with mental illness issues of one kind or another. And she happens to be someone who not only is a psychologist, but also herself has struggled with various issues of mental illness herself. And she has written about that in a very intriguing book called Professional Patient, A Memoir of Bipolar Disorder. The book is published by Lulu.com. And I'm very pleased to have this opportunity to speak with Lisa Abbott about her intriguing story, her uncommon story, and about the experience she had of reliving some of her past experiences as she wrote this memoir. Lisa Abbott, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be on here.
Good. And we remind our listeners again that they have the opportunity to meet you and hear you read from a professional patient at the event that we were talking about on Saturday afternoon. Your book begins in actually fairly happy, cheerful fashion in recounting your childhood. You were born actually somewhere in Montana. But even early on, while your childhood was still relatively happy, you point to certain things that were, in a sense, vague harbingers of trouble to come, among them the fact that there was probably a little too much alcohol in the picture. Can you just say a word about that? At what point in your childhood alcohol started to be, in a sense, an unhelpful presence in your life or culture or community?
About 15 or 16, I was coping with some fairly significant issues. I had been a survivor of assault as a teenager, and I also associated with a lot of peers who did a lot of drinking, and I went along with crowd and just tried to cope with what was going on in my life. I grew up in a family where substance abuse was somewhat part of the life and the world, and didn't really view it as anything too much out of the ordinary, to be honest with you.
And so this becomes eventually an issue that is kind of a serious exacerbating experience. You had, among other talents, some significant talent as a gymnast. Tell us a little bit about your career, the promise that you had, but then ultimately the string of injuries that pretty much drew that experience to an end for you.
Yes, I started gymnastics at a very young age, and I participated for many, many years as a competitive athlete, and I did have many injuries. I broke a lot of bones, I tore ligaments, I walked around with bruised up shins and rips on my hands from the bars and all sorts of fun injuries to show for that. But, yeah, it was a good experience for me. I was able to focus in on something that was positive and probably kept me out of trouble until I did get into those later teen years.
Hmm. You eventually switched over to the swimming team and diving team. What kind of difference did that make? And was that a similarly positive experience, or was that the first sign of some trouble for you?
Well, I moved to Wisconsin for my senior year of high school, and I decided that rather than continuing with gymnastics, which has been very straining on me, I would try a high school sport because gymnastics was an outside sport. It was in a private facility, and my peers from school were never really involved, so I thought, I'll try diving. I can use my skills. And to be honest, it was a lot easier than gymnastics. Hitting the water was painful at times, but nowhere near as painful as breaking bones on the vault or the tumbling. So I tried that, and it was kind of nice to be part of a high school team where, you know, you could be in the yearbook and kind of associate with peers in your school, have Letterman's jacket. It was kind of exciting for me.
Tell us about the experience of going off to college, I think specifically to Pepperdine University. What were the college years like for you?
Sure. The first college I attended was UW-La Crosse for my bachelor's degree. And that, one of the things that began in college was an eating disorder. When I got out of the sports arena, so to speak, I started to gain weight. It typically happens in college, right, freshman in college year. But because sports like gymnastics and so on are so strict with regards to eating and maintaining a very tiny frame, when the weight gain began to start, I kind of had a lot of anxiety about that, panic. So I started dieting very excessively and obsessing about exercising and calories and restricting all kinds of foods. So I dropped from a weight of about 130 to about 89 pounds over the course of about 9 to 12 months. So I was coping with that as well. I didn't really view it as a problem, to be honest with you, until I took a trip back to Montana, where I had grown up, and my friends at that point noticed the very extreme difference in my shape and how I looked, and they kind of wanted me to get help. But when I returned back to Wisconsin, we didn't really seek mental health treatment. There have been many things that had happened throughout my teen years and college years, and my family, they just didn't really know a lot about mental health treatment. So there really wasn't a notion or an idea about seeking counseling or an opinion from a professional. So I kind of resumed my life and eventually was able to overcome that on my own in about my junior year of college.
You ultimately marry, move to Madison, actually have a son and then a daughter. Tell us at what point as a new wife and then as a new mother that there began to be elements in your life that seemed to be past the line of just normal stresses and strains that just about everybody experiences. At what point did life begin to take this darker turn?
Well, to be honest with you, it actually dates back to my teen years. I actually attempted suicide when I was 15. I overdosed on a bottle of prescription pills and during a depression and dealing with those traumas that I mentioned. And it was another one of those scenarios where it was kept within the family. You know, they took care of me and kept an eye on me as best as they could, but, you know, again, didn't really think about mental health treatment. Yes, I became a parent pretty young, in my young 20s, and I really did love being a parent, but the bipolar disorder was becoming pretty bad by that point. I was experiencing a lot of severe depressions, and then I would rebound into a mania. I had some periods of stability, but I would often be depressed. I would stay in bed. I didn't want to talk to anybody. I had very low self-esteem and crying all the time. wouldn't eat or drink, just kind of didn't do much of anything. And then, like I said, I would kind of rebound into these manic episodes where I was all over the place. I was spending all sorts of money, loading up on massive debt and taking out certifications, and my mind would be racing. I'd be writing down all sorts of things and renovating rooms and landscaping and steam cleaning at 3 o'clock in the morning. There was some rage along with the mania. So sometimes things would end up broken. There was a time when my son was young and I broke his fish tank and his fish were kind of flopping on the floor. So I know that was probably traumatic at the time. So yeah, it definitely was not a good scenario for raising children.
And did this feel like what you had gone through earlier, but just taken to a more serious or chronic level, or was this, in a sense, a brand new chapter in terms of your mental illness difficulties?
I think it was a brand new chapter. I think that some of the things in childhood were kind of signs and indicators that there were probably going to be problems, even though we didn't view it that way at the time. And then the stress of being in graduate school, having a new baby, being married, pursuing these advanced studies, and working lots of jobs on the side to try to pay for these things just, exacerbated all of that and kind of blew it up into a big problem for me and my husband and my children.
Your studies, by the way, were you already pursuing study of psychology with the hopes of becoming a psychologist someday?
I was. I continued school throughout my young adult years. I went straight from UW-La Crosse with a bachelor's degree out to Los Angeles to Pepperdine University and received my master's degree in psychology. And shortly after that, started in Milwaukee and worked on my doctoral degree in clinical psychology and finished that up in about 5 years. So I was in school for about 9 to 10 years straight through while all of these things were going on.
Wow.
So, yes, I had multiple things going on in my life.
What kind of a difference did it make for you to be a psychology student suffering from the sounds of it, pretty significant, severe mental illness issues yourself? Surely that made some difference in terms of you being able to understand what was going wrong or that something was amiss with you psychologically, or did that not necessarily mean that you were going to make those kind of connections and understand that there was a serious problem there?
I just wasn't really able to apply it to myself. I know that sounds like a strange scenario, but I was very fascinated with my psychology classes and excited to pursue a career in that area. And I did find a lot of it relevant to myself and my childhood, but I really never put a label on what was going on with me. I didn't feel I had a diagnosis. I chalked a lot of it up to having those difficulties in my teen years and the trauma. I also had some family traumas along the way. My mom had a severe head trauma and brain surgeries and resulting disabilities. And my father died of a heart attack while I was out of the country. So a lot of times I would attribute these things to things going on in my life or childhood problems that I had been through. So I know it sounds like a very strange scenario because you're studying psychology and you're studying diagnoses and how to work with people who have these difficulties, but I just, for whatever reason, just didn't put those pieces together for myself.
What about your husband through all of this? What was his level of concern? And at what point did it start to become clear to him that what you were experiencing was not just the ordinary stresses and strains of married life and young parenthood, but that something more seriously wrong was amiss?
We were definitely becoming concerned when we were, shortly after we were married and had our son, and concerned, frightened, angry. It's always been an extreme source of support for me. I don't think that I would be this far or, you know, kind of moved ahead with my life without him. But again, you know, I didn't even seek treatment until I was in my mid-20s. And for my husband, he was always kind of there in the background and there to listen and, you know, pick up the slack that I sometimes wasn't able to do, which was amazing. And I give him, you know, a massive amount of credit for sticking with me and taking care of all those things. It wasn't until my mid-20s that I sought out therapy, and due to, you know, a lot of the suicidal ideation and just severe difficulties, we decided together that I would seek treatment at a hospital and admit myself into a mental health ward. And then, you know, eventually I was diagnosed, and we both came to understand very slowly, actually, but eventually came to understand what was going on, why I was having these symptoms and problems, and started to take the small steps towards getting better.
We're speaking with Lisa Abbott, a local psychologist who herself, as you just heard, has some history, her own history of mental illness. She has written about that experience in a book called Professional Patient, A Memoir of Bipolar Disorder. Lisa Abbott, explain to our listeners what bipolar disorder is. That's a term which we hear a lot of, and much more than I think we once did, but that doesn't mean that most of us really understand exactly what it is, what is going wrong in the mind of a person who receives that diagnosis. And how consistent is bipolar disorder? That is, does it manifest itself in a whole lot of different ways depending on each individual person?
Well, bipolar disorder is one of several different mood disorders. And unfortunately, it's kind of a lifelong disorder. So it's something that typically needs to be treated with medication and sometimes counseling and other kinds of treatments for many, many years and throughout a person's life. And the primary problems are periods of depression, severe depression, and periods of what we call mania or manic episodes. So they're kind of polar opposites. And you can have times as well where things are fine and you're not in a manic episode, you're not having depression, you can kind of be in a consistent mood as well. But when you are in a depression, your mind is very slowed down and you have a lot of negative thinking about yourself, your future. You tend to feel like you don't have a lot of worth and you don't have much going on in your life that's positive. There's often a lot of sleeping, a lot of dark, negative, suicidal thoughts, crying, sometimes for no reason, for hours on end. And then when you do go into those manic episodes, they can be, you know, they can be smaller manic episodes where your thoughts are speeding and you're accomplishing things, but they can get very out of hand because people who are in a mania tend to make very poor decisions. They spend a lot of money without a lot of forethought of how that will affect their future. They make a lot of grandiose plans about doing different things that seem like a great idea at the time, but again, kind of fall short in the end. You have a lot of kind of thinking that's speeded up and tangential, and you're not concentrating well. So for me, for instance, I would be writing down thoughts on pieces of paper all around the house, this or that, thinking that it was a wonderful insight and, you know, an amazing idea. And then when I would come back down to kind of a consistent level, I would kind of look around and say, what was I doing? You know, what are these confused ideas and thoughts that are written all over the place? And, so a lot of people stay up for many hours of the night. They'll be up in the middle of the night. Sometimes you can stay up for many nights in a row. And the thing about it is you're not tired. So you just keep going and going. And you know, I would renovate entire rooms in a home or landscape my yard in a very short period of time. And in a matter of days, I would accomplish these things. So, you know, sometimes it can get to a point where you hallucinate, where you start having typically like an auditory hallucination because those thoughts become so seeded. When it's at most severe, you can actually start to hallucinate and hear things. And sometimes, like I mentioned before, there's some rage or aggression. Some people are all kind of what I call a happy. They might have a happy manic episode where they think everything's great and wonderful and everything they're doing is going to end up roses. And then other times it comes out kind of in a form of anger where you don't have any other way of getting all that energy out. So you show your anger through, like I said, breaking things or yelling or sometimes screaming or kicking or taking out your anger and frustration in various ways. So those are just some of the symptoms. And like I said, you can have periods where you're doing just fine, but a lot of times stressors in your life, if you have a major stressor or you're going through consistent and exacerbating stress for long periods of time, it will kind of trigger your depression or mania. So that's a little bit about bipolar disorder.
It sounds so complicated. I mean, it sounds like there's more than one thing going wrong. I mean, the fact that, you know, not only is there this, what we sort of think of as a vacillation between two extremes of behavior, but then on top of it, even those two extremes can manifest themselves in a variety of ways. So for instance, for your very patient forbearing husband, it sounds like he just would have no way of knowing what was going to be coming next. I just can't imagine what that would be like. Although, would it get to the point eventually where your husband would have a pretty good sense of, well, today's going to be this kind of day, and today Lisa's going to be going through this, and I better do this to help make that a little bit better? Or was life completely unpredictable?
Well, when I was in those stages, I would be in them for a while. So yes, eventually he definitely became aware that, you know, she's in a state of depression, and I know he would be very worried. It would become very obvious when you're in your room all of the time, or, you know, just dragging yourself to work when you're tired, you can't concentrate, and you're not eating, you're not drinking, and you're talking very negative things about yourself and not wanting to be around and making these kinds of statements sometimes. Of course, that would be, you know, horribly frightening and frustrating, and you're right, I can't imagine what he would be going through. And, you know, during the manias, I think that a lot of times, like I said, in those, what I call the good manias, it was sometimes kind of exciting for him because we're doing these fun, exciting things. And a lot of times he kind of went with the flow and, hey, this is kind of great. We're accomplishing these wonderful things and we're having fun. And but other times it didn't end up so well when, like I said, that, you know, I'm a steam cleaning at 3 a.m. and he's trying to sleep because he's got to get up to go to work early in the morning. So he would become frustrated with things like that. I also played instruments. So I would, earlier in my life, I would play piano all hours of the night. I actually rented a piano for a 2-story apartment and had somebody bring it up, and I'd play piano all night. I did that in college as well. So yeah, I definitely think that if I was in a situation, I'm not sure that I would have stuck around, but lucky for me, I have a great husband, and he's been super supportive and, like I said, picked up a lot of slack and helped me along every step of the way.
Hmm. What kind of a difference did it make for you as a parent to be battling this? I mean, how disruptive was this to you as a mother, to your young children? And to what extent were they partially or fully aware that something was wrong? Tell us about that.
I'm sure that it affected them, of course, and I'm sure that they had a sense that something was wrong. When I would go into the hospital, you know, a lot of times the explanation was mommy's sick and she's going to be home soon. There's nothing to worry about. There was a lot of secrecy. I know it sounds like the behaviors are extreme, but among other family members outside of my husband or, you know, when I did have treatment providers, nobody really would talk about it. So it was all kind of like, I can imagine them confusing because, you know, these things are going on. And on the other hand, it's kind of the norm. It's kind of, this is how our household is. I can't speak for them, but I know that it likely affected them. When they got to be teenagers, they started to learn a little bit more about mental illness, and I started to talk to them. And at that point, I was being treated, so I had a much better understanding of my diagnoses and what I needed to do in order to be a good mom and be a good wife and continue my career. And they're actually now very supportive. They're supportive of my writing. They're supportive of advocating for mental illness. So they kind of went from their early teen years where they didn't really want, you know, to have a mom who had to take medication, to have a mom who had this diagnosis, but, you know, eventually became very supportive. And now they come to fundraisers with me. They come to events that we organize for mental health awareness. And they're surprisingly very supportive.
Hmm. So what ultimately ended up making the most positive difference in terms of allowing you to function as successfully as you do, given the reality that, as you said earlier in the interview, someone with bipolar disorder tends to live with that to some extent for the rest of their lives. So I think what you're saying is that this is something that typically someone is not cured of or completely rid of, but obviously you are functioning very successfully now. What was the most important factor or factors in allowing that to happen, in allowing you to gain as much control as you have over your bipolar disorder and your symptoms?
Well, one of the most important things for sure was receiving the appropriate treatment. And sometimes that takes time to find the right people to work with you. There has to be a good fit between your doctors and your counselors and yourself. And I was in counseling for about 7 years. And I have taken many, many medications. So one of the biggest things, that the key for me, was figuring out that diagnosis of bipolar disorder. And that was something that my therapist really worked with me on. I didn't want to believe it. I thought it was kind of strange. And it just, you know, I just didn't think it could apply to me as, you know, somebody working through school and working in this profession. But, you know, she slowly helped me. She worked through all of these issues that was going on, and she would frequently remind me and explain to me, you know, that I had bipolar disorder. And I would go to the psychiatrist and take various medications. I was unhappy with a lot of them, which is pretty common for people with bipolar disorders. They try medications and there's side effects, and they don't like the side effects, and I didn't like the side effects, and I didn't want to have to take medication all the time. But eventually, you know, a lot of people with bipolar disorder have to really be on medication on a consistent daily basis and have a regimen that they stick to. So I would say the most important factors for me were finding a wonderful therapist who was very patient with me and understanding, and really helped me understand this diagnosis and what was going on with me, and encouraged me to take my medication and be consistent with that. It's just so important. If you know, a lot of you give up. A lot of people will start treatment and they give up. They don't feel like their therapist is a good fit or the doctor isn't a good fit. But at some point, I came to a realization that I had to do it. There was no other way of continuing on and putting my family through this and putting my career at risk. Once you understand that you have that diagnosis, which is a huge piece of it, and it's very, very difficult to accept given all the stigma out there, that's where you can move forward.
What kind of difference has this made for you as a practicing psychologist? That is, what difference do you think it makes in how you view your patients and how you interact with them and the kind of help which you are able to give them? The fact that you yourself have had to and continue to grapple with mental illness yourself. What kind of difference has that made for you professionally?
Believe that it's actually a valuable asset to me, and that I have a very unique vantage point because not only have I been through the book knowledge mm-hmm. and the field experience and these various things, I've been through the lived experience of having bipolar disorder and other mental health issues and trauma and substance abuse, so I can relate to them on a lot of other levels. A personal level. So when listening to them, I can understand much better, you know, kind of what they're going through, how things feel. I really think it makes a difference in helping people to understand and having been in kind of walking in their shoes, walking in kind of understanding. I really think that makes a big difference.
How long have you been open about that reality in your life ahead of writing this book, for instance? Would most of your patients typically know this about yourself? Is this something that you would typically disclose? Or is it something that would only be disclosed kind of on a case-by-case basis if there was some relevant or pressing, compelling reason to do so? I mean, how much have you, in a sense, kept this sheltered from your patients, and how hard was it to step out publicly and write this book and share this story, in a sense, so openly?
I have only been open with these issues for the past few years. I kept this secret for over 15 years without talking to patients for sure, and really only mentioning bits and pieces to supervisors, but often in a way that, you know, I was having medical issues, I would kind of talk around the subject, I need the time off to be in the hospital, but, you know, mm-hmm. a few knew, they were understanding, they're psychologists, but for the most part, I tried to keep it under wraps as best I could. I never divulged to patients or clients. I only came to being open and kind of coming out about these issues when I finally decided to publish this book. This book was actually written many years ago during a manic spree, ironically. And then I kind of pulled it out of the shelves a couple of years ago. My children were older. I was stable. I was living a consistent, healthy life. And I kind of updated it and organized it, worked with an editor. And the most important thing I had to do was work with my family members and have them read the book and kind of get their perspective and, you know, figure out how they felt about it, what ramifications it would have for them. Most importantly, my children, my siblings, my mother, and my husband, of course. And I felt that would probably be difficult and maybe not happen, but again, the support has been phenomenal. And my sister in particularly, who was very doubtful about mental health from the very beginning, has been enormously helpful and supportive. And so given all of that, I decided, you know what, I'm not going to let all these experiences be in vain. I'm I'm going to take this and I want to help people. I want to show them that, you know, even going through all these circumstances and kind of impossible scenarios and terrible kinds of things in your life, you actually can lead a happy, you know, consistent, healthy life, and you can achieve your goals, achieve your dreams. And I thought, hey, maybe this can be something positive I can do and take all those experiences and shed light on the subject and maybe break down some of those negative stigmas that are out there.
Hmm. And you are, for the most part, well. I mean, are there still certain moments when some of these issues sort of come to the forefront again, or by and large, is this securely, in a sense, in control?
I am, for the most part, well. Of course, I have some moments where, you know, I feel like, oh, maybe I'm heading down, you know, a little bit of a depressed road, especially when, you know, things happen. I had a family diagnosis of another family diagnosis of cancer. And things like this will happen, and it's easy to start to go down that path. But one of the things I've learned to do, and it took me a very long time to do this, it just doesn't happen overnight, is to identify that and understand it and talk to family members, talk to your counselor. Making sure you're taking that medication is just so important. So, yeah, I really think that given everything that has happened, given what I've been through, took a long time, but I think that things are going very well. And I was very fearful of putting this book out. I had no idea what the reactions of people would be. I didn't know how they would view me, but surprisingly, it's been a good thing for me. It's kind of been a relief to get all this off my shoulders. I can be honest now, and it's been a great thing.
The book, once again, is Professional Patient, A Memoir of Bipolar Disorder, and we want to remind you that the author, Lisa Abbott, is going to be participating in a special book fair this Saturday afternoon at the Rohde Center for the Arts in downtown Kenosha between 2 and 5 o'clock. It's an opportunity for you to meet her and learn more about her story. Lisa Abbott, I thank you so much for joining me today on The Morning Show, and for sharing your very interesting and inspiring story with our listeners. Best wishes to you.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate that.
Some of you may know the name of Alice Eve Cohen, who is a well-known playwright and solo theater artist. Her first book, What I Thought I Knew, was selected by Oprah Winfrey herself as one of the best books for the summer. And she has written a new memoir, which is something very, very special, called The Year My Mother Came Back, in which she both reflects on her own experiences with her own mother, who had passed away several decades before, and her own experiences as a mother to two daughters. And it is a wonderfully, lovingly written book, and, of course, a perfect book to be talking about on the eve of Mother's Day. Alice Eve Cohen, we welcome you to The Morning Show.
Thank you, Greg.
Could you just say a word about how it felt different to write a book like this versus the work that you do as a playwright? Are those two artistic ventures very close to you, or do they feel like two kind of completely different means of expression?
They do feel very close to me. And with this book especially, there's so much dialogue in the book. I always write a lot of dialogue, both as playwright and as a memoirist. But in this book especially, in my vivid fantasies about my mother when she comes back to me in this year, three decades after her death, I have many fantasized dialogues with her. And so I've created my mother on the page. She certainly is a vivid presence in my imagination, but I've created her on the page for readers through these dialogues. And so I think my playwriting experience enhanced my ability to conjure her on the page for readers.
You've done an absolutely brilliant job. And
thank
you. So appreciate so much of what you share in this book. One of the things you say about the thinking back to your mother, and what would be the year that she died?
She died in 1977.
My own mother died in 1988. And so in some respects, we're looking back at our mothers over a somewhat similar chasm of time. You write at one point, 31 years is a long time. My mother has become a character from a story I used to know.
Mm-hmm.
Say a word more about that, because I have a feeling a lot of people besides me can really relate to that.
Oh, well, thank you. I have heard that from other readers as well, that they can relate to that. When we lose someone, they are always in our memory, but memory is so malleable and subjective. And so our memory changes year by year. I think a year after my mother's death, I remember her in a certain way, a decade later in a different way. And 30 years later, I was parenting my own daughters just as she had parented me and my sisters. And I was the age she was when she passed away. And so I was identifying with her, walking in her footsteps, feeling a kind of empathy that I was not able to experience when I was just out of college and really not very mature. So here I was, a mom myself, able to connect with her, relate to her, identify with her. And so my memories of her became more vivid. I don't really know if they were more accurate. Our memories are not, documentaries of an event. They're creative and subjective. But I know that they were real to me and impactful and emotionally compelling and enabled me to revisit my relationship with her and finally understand her and finally forgive her and finally forgive myself.
And this is one of the most intriguing parts of the book for me, is when you talk about your own sense of maternal guilt, which is tied up in a lot of different things. But this is something, of course, that many, many women can relate to, this sense of never quite being as good, as perfect a mother as they really want to be for the children that they love so much. How has the process of, in a sense, reconnecting with your own mother and thinking about her mothering, what role has that played in you dealing with this kind of maternal guilt of your own?
Oh, I love your question. Thank you. I do agree with you that women get hung up with this idea of being perfect mothers, and there is no such thing. There's no such thing as being a perfect mother. I think maybe as children we expect it of our parents, and as parents we expect it of ourselves. And when I was revisiting the issues that made my mother, were so challenging to my mother, she had breast cancer. She was fighting against a pre-women's movement, pre-feminist world that was creating all sorts of obstacles for her professional careers. And I was able, as an adult, to look back and see that, of course, she was angry and frustrated. Of course, she was conflicted and distracted. But that maternal ambivalence is not a crime. I think it's a kind of a healthy struggle to be a complete person and to be personally fulfilled as well as fulfill the needs of our children. So when I was able to understand that in my mother and to accept that she did absolutely the best she could and loved me, and her distractions were just part of her life and they were inevitabilities, I could love her and accept her and accept that I experience similar ambivalences and similar conflicts. And I think all in all, the process of writing the book has been very freeing, and I've heard from readers that they also find it liberating to read. And I hope my daughters would agree. I think that by letting go of my guilt about being imperfect or sometimes being distracted, I think it has kind of opened up a pathway so that there's the guilt is out of the way and we can have more fun and more of an open and loving relationship.
One of the darkest aspects to the book are those moments when you look back on some very painful moments, particularly in your childhood, involving the fact that you're Jewish. And that, sadly, you grew up in a neighborhood where there were at least a handful of neighborhood kids who did some very, very unkind things to you and your family because you were Jewish. I appreciate the frankness with which you share about that. How does that fold into kind of the overall story of you and your mother?
Well, we did grow up in a neighborhood that where we were the only Jews, and it was a suburban neighborhood. And really, it was, to a certain extent, it was the innocence of children who had certain ideas and notions, and it was almost innocent, and yet we were I was baffled by the general hostility in the neighborhood towards us as the only Jews. Certain pranks were played, names were called, there was a sense of our being thought of as different and isolated. My mother was a sociologist, so she was actually studying the neighborhood and studying the political and racial and religious strata and social mores in the neighborhood. I don't think I was aware of that when I was a young child, but when I was an adult, I read her paper on this. And she also was a civil rights activist. She would take my hand when I was 5 years old. We'd walk around the neighborhood canvassing for civil rights, and doors would be slammed in her face. So I think all of this, when I was a child, it made me perceive her as being heroic, courageous, facing up to this kind of hostility with tremendous, you know, real guts and conviction. And I think throughout my life, and certainly in my present life, I think of that aspect of her as being a real inspiration. And in that area, I find her a fantastic role model. And I love that my daughters have now read the book and have met their grandmother on the page and have also expressed the fact that they find her an heroic pioneer into some of these political social justice areas.
Hmm. We have just a few moments left, and I almost shouldn't ask this, but I don't think we've really even touched on the nature of this memoir and the title, The Year My Mother Came Back. Just say a quick word to our listeners about this intriguing part of the memoir.
Oh, thank you. Well, the title refers to two different things. It is this year, 2008, 2009, when after years of shutting my mother out of my memories, she came back to me in a flood of memories when I needed her the most. And it also refers to the last year of my mother's life. After suffering from illness for many years, she finally found herself. She found her dream job. I was in my last year of college. We finally reconciled, and I thought we were going to have a great relationship moving forward when suddenly she died. So it was both this year in my adult life as a parent, remembering her, and it was the last year of her life when she and I finally warmed up and were able to be close together again.
Mm. The memoir, again, is The Year My Mother Came Back. It is published by Algonquin Books, the author, Alice Eve Cohen. Alice Eve Cohen, I absolutely loved this book, and I hope many people will seek it out in time for this upcoming Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day to you and everyone you care about.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Gosh, that was fun to talk.
It's 8:59 at WGTD. Greg Berg returns tomorrow with another edition of The Morning Show. His guest, the author of Jimmy Lee and James, Two Lives, Two Deaths, and the Movement That Changed America. It's a detailed chronicle of the shocking murders of two men, one white, one black, which mounted a groundswell of support for what became the Voting Rights Act. That's tomorrow on The Morning Show at 8:10 and WGTD. The forecast from the National Weather Service, just ahead of classical music from Wisconsin Public Radio. Sunny and warmer today, a high of 65 near Lake Michigan, a bit warmer inland. West winds at 10 to 15 miles per hour. The normal high for this time of year is 69, so we're right on track. Partly cloudy skies tonight, a low of 43. Generally sunny skies into